hand out there tonight.
Yep.
Here, give me a hat. Kelly, get me a bottle, will you? I need a drink.
A little one or a big one?
A big one.
Are you ready for your close-up? We might as well listen to the Uncut Gems podcast. Weekly show where we talk about movies nobody else wants to talk about. But this is not an episode of the regular show. This is an episode of our monthly John Cassavetes marathon, where in 2023 we go through every single movie that John Cassavetes directed. And my name's Jakub, by the way.
And my name's Randy.
So today, as this is the ninth installment of the John Cassavetes marathon, we're in the month of September. We are talking about opening night, the ninth film John Cassavetes directed and written. So before I do that, I always forget, but this time I remember. If you're listening to this on our Patreon, thank you very so much from the bottom of our hearts for tuning in, for supporting the show, for dishing out your hard-earned cash in these difficult times to support an indie podcast that no one really cares about. But we care because you care. So it's amazing. Thank you very much. Now, if you're listening to the little teaser, then just bear in mind in a few minutes, this is going to come to a close. And you'll have to go to patreon.com/uncutgemspod to continue. And then this is in exchange for just $3. £4.50 Canadian, £3, €3 worth of support. And then in exchange, you're getting this podcast in full and almost 70 other podcasts, a full-on David Lynch marathon with conversations just like this one about every single movie that David Lynch directed, bonus tie-ins, many retrospectives, and our monthly additions to the Soderbergh journey with his more sort of well-known films. So if you want to listen to us argue about Ocean's 11, that's where you do it, on our Patreon. And a few others. I know a few times you mentioned this, and I think this is a good idea to mention. Like, if you want to kind of just give it a taste test, first of all, there's a 7-day free trial, so there's that. But then also there's a few episodes that are sort of open for consumption. So in the recent memory, we have Heat, just a 3-hour and a bit long conversation about, well, Heat. Because I don't know if you noticed, but you know, like our episodes kind of follow the rule of we have to talk about a movie for at least as long as it takes to watch this and probably more.
At least.
So,
because we just talked about Unsane and our recording was twice the length of that movie.
Yeah, you could watch it twice. So you can watch it once and then watch it again to take in the notes that we just made and then have fun with us having fun at the expense of this movie. And still giving it like between 3.5 and 4 stars.
Sure. Yeah.
I was so happy that I talked Jack out of 5 stars. But we're not here to talk about Steven Soderbergh. We're here to talk about John Cassavetes. So before I do that, by the way, just quick reminder. In September, we also did Conan the Barbarian tie-in to the Arnold Schwarzenegger month of Arnold movies that we did on the main show, so 80s bombs that all started with the letter R, and also the Soderbergh tie-in for the month of September was Side Effects. Now, yes, yes, that was Side Effects. Yeah, so go and do that. Go and listen to these things if you haven't already. Support the show, and then might as well start our conversation about opening night.
I devoted my life to you, to movies, to music, to theater. I'm 17 years old. I like sex. I like to turn people on. And that's what the theater is. It's sex. It's like getting laid.
But
did you do to her?
So opening night was directed by John Cassavetes, written by him as well. Then stars General and Ben Gazzara, the usual suspects. John Blondell, Paul Stewart, Zora Lampert. John Cassavetes is in it as well. Weirdly, it doesn't star Peter Falk, but he's in there for a very short cameo at the end, together with Peter Bogdanovich, mm-hmm. who's playing himself. And he's referred to as himself. And he also did pick up second unit shot somewhere in there. I'm getting ahead of myself. The film stars Gina Rowlands and all these people. And it's a story about Myrtle Gordon. So she's a middle-aged actress. So well-known stage actress who's in the middle of doing previews, I think, in New Haven, Connecticut, just ahead of their titular opening night of their play that's supposed to happen on Broadway. And one day she's accosted on the way out of the theater by a very young fan. And then this young fan, so that's a teenage girl, runs after her car and gets hit by another car and dies. And then ever since then, the specter of this young woman starts haunting Myrtle's existence as she's trying to prepare to open and star in her Broadway show, which is called The Second Woman, where she's also supposed to play a middle-aged woman, kind of just struggling with her own mortality, among other things. So that's kind of the movie, more or less. To spare you the preamble, because I have a feeling like you could easily go for 20 minutes, but then again, a lot of it, if you listen to our previous conversations and if you listen to the other preambles, it's almost, I mean, this is going to be a point of conversation, I think, at some point, if I remember, because again, like, Jakub's come unprepared to the show. But it's almost frighteningly a lot of the same, as in, it's like the genesis of the film, I'll just put it that way, that's kind of a little bit different. So apparently the genesis of the film traces back to that time where Barbara Barbara Streisand came up to John Cassavetes and asked him to direct her in the movie that she was making, which was a Star is Born remake. So he turned her down. Apparently, the legend goes that, you know, like, there was apparently told in cocktail parties that apparently John Cassavetes told her, like, why would I direct you? You know? Something like that. So, but unverifiable, so you can't tell. However, so this idea of A Star is Born, because he was a fan of the original and he also liked All About Eve, these sort of ideas of a female centered movie about dealing with stardom, dealing with aging, dealing with your own legacy, were kind of just circling somewhere in his brain. So as he finished work, as he was almost trying to get himself distracted from the failure that was the killing of a Chinese bookie, he distracted himself by writing a script that he envisaged would be for his wife Jenna. So he wanted her to star in this film. He wrote, I want to say, like, almost like 180 pages worth of a draft very quickly, trimmed it down to 130 something, and then just immediately proceeded with just trying to make this movie. Now, problem is, he didn't have the money to do it. Because he never made any money on the killing of a Chinese
again.
Bookie. Again. So it's one of those where he's... And then I don't think he was in a position to remortgage his house for the umpteenth time again. So he made this movie by... He started making this movie by just approaching friends and neighbors. So everyone in the movie starred on deferred salaries. No one got paid for anything. Everyone was basically just turning in favors. So Freddie Elms was behind the camera. So essentially the cast was kind of like, Al Rubin was producing it. He was also the DP on it. he wanted Peter Falk to star in this, but Peter Falk was busy. Ben Gazzara, he wanted to be a different character, but then again, Ben Gazzara read the script and he decided he wanted to take the role of the director of the play, which Cassavetes kind of sort of planned for himself, because he wanted either Gazzara or Falk to be Maurice in the play, so which would be the character, the lead of playing opposite Myrtle as her partner on the stage. So Cassavetes decided to take this role. He also wanted Bette Davis to play the playwright of the play, but he couldn't get her, so he got Joan Blondell instead. And you know, he's just essentially just what they did: shot everything on the cheap. They found a decrepit theater in Pasadena that was about to be demolished. So they shot all the sort of the interiors in the rehearsals in there. They also shot a bunch of scenes in Cassavetes' house, and a few pickups somewhere in New York, because they just knew, you know, it would be a good idea to do it in New York now. So long story short, they spent again a kind of $1.5 million on this, and it was all loans, just taking out loans in banks. On the idea that, you know, like, they're gonna release it and it's gonna make its money back and they're gonna start, you know, paying off the banks. You could smell the disaster from here, right? So what happened was a few little nuggets of stories were, because one thing was as they shot, because they shot this movie between November 1976 and March 1977, but at end of January, beginning of February 1977, Cassavetes runs out of money. They said, like, we have to shut down production. I have absolutely no money left. Sorry. Right? So everyone decided to just, well, to essentially they said, like, they came back for free. And then they had these weird sort of situations where for the big premiere, I mean, it's a long story with Cassavetes anyway, because he is, I know this is kind of unpopular now because the WGA strike is going on, right? But he was always fighting against unions, because most of his films were non-union jobs, because he couldn't afford to pay people union wages. He wouldn't be able to make these movies because he was always paying out of his own pocket. So in order to get people in tuxedos and furs for the big premiere, he wanted first to kind of just get rich people to donate something to charity and then make it a charitable event, so that, you know, the proceeds would go to some kind of a charity and they would just be there to clap for 3 hours or whatever. He couldn't get enough interest, so he just grabbed people off the street, tell them to just, if you have a tuxedo, come over and just clap. Just watch a play and then react as if... Just, it's a play. Like, don't mind the cameras, right? So he got away with that. Not a single affidavit was signed anywhere in there, because it's all rogue filmmaking anyway. So they put it together, filmed everything, because they came back to film after they ran out of money, because everyone on the shoot decided to come back for free because they wanted to finish the film. So they did everything for free. Cassavetes starts editing. Again, it takes him a while because he again has loads and loads of film stock to develop. And then in the meantime, he's starring in Brian De Palma's The Fury. So he had to complete the edit very quickly, because he started this shoot in Europe. And then the story goes apparently that they wanted to kind of extend his shoot in on the De Palma film for a while, and he demanded he instituted for an additional like $10,000 or $20,000 extra money, and people thought, oh, he's being a bit of a ding dong, but apparently he needed this money so that he could finish the edit of the film, because he couldn't afford getting the lab processing paid off. So he did that. And then they finished it, trimmed it, whatever. So, long story short, the movie's ready to be released right around Christmas 1977. So, I think the first preview, press screening, I think was somewhere in LA, 21st of December 1977. And the press of the time were thinking, oh, Cassavetes is going for the Oscars because he's trying to kind of fit it in the window. No, he wasn't. He just knew that he needed to release it now because in January he would have to start paying off the bank loans. So it was a coincidence, but also it was a bit of a travesty because the film opened in LA on Christmas after the press screening, which resulted in a variety.
If you'd like to listen to this show in its entirety, head over to our Patreon over at patreon.com/uncutgemspod, where for $3 a month you'll be able to hear many other bonus recordings of ours, such as tie-ins to our main show, mini retrospectives, and comprehensive director marathons. patreon.com/uncutgemspod is the place, so head over there and subscribe.